You know, sometimes the fastest way to get you away from home or somewhere else is through a book. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Great to have Daniel Golden with us today. He is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. And he has 10 books that will take you to different locations around the world. So you may be looking for some recommendations for summer reading or just a good book to curl up with. And I hope you'll join in with your questions about those books, or maybe you've got some books of your own with your favorite summer book reading. You can be part of our conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Daniel Golden, welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
And thank you for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar with Boswell Book Company, tell us about the store.
It's an independent bookstore. It's in the city of Milwaukee, just sort of on the edge. It's been around for about 10 years. We just celebrated our anniversary. And it's a general bookstore with fiction and nonfiction and kids books and all kinds of different genres of mystery and science fiction and fantasy and some genres that are mixed into the fiction section, like horror and romance, and then things like science and psychology and history and
Whatever you need, you're going to find there.
I hope so. Some people say.
Well, you know, one of the things I notice, we have a lot of authors on the show, and or I get notices, and authors are often reading at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. You have a lot of authors at the store.
We do. When I started, we had a pretty vibrant author program at Harry W. Schwartz, which is where I worked before, and I felt like it was really important to get people in the door. And I also, it does sort of give you a mission as well that you can it's a way, a really great way to connect with the community, and it's a way to connect with the publishing industry and with authors. And I do think it makes it easier when you're really passionate about a book to kind of give that a hook. Yeah. So I did some of the books I mentioned. Was thinking about today. Some people are coming to our store, and some people are coming to other stores in the state too.
Well, very cool. How do you have a way of selecting?
Would you like to know the secrets? I'll give away the secrets.
Seat of the pants,
there is a seat of the pantsness to it. It's like my massive email comes up and I open a file randomly. There's a lot of organization though too. I would believe I'm the master of Excel grids that go on for pages and pages with all these different columns. A lot of it. There's several different ways that we or other bookstores around the country bring in authors. One way is we do seasonal proposals. So the larger publishers say, these are people we're thinking of sending around the country. And then we will make a pitch based on what we've done before or maybe a partnership that we have. Another way is that authors will come to us and just write to us. Maybe they'll have a publicist, maybe they will contact us themselves. Maybe it'll be their cousin or their babysitter's wife's dentist's something or other. I mean, it's fascinating the connections that you see from these programs. We are hosting in September one of my booksellers' fifth grade students when he was in fifth grade. He's now an adult, but it was his student when the kid was in fifth grade. He had my Tim as a teacher. That's a picture book called Lawrence in the Fall. That was kind of like crazy, but it's a beautiful book. And then sometimes we try to be a little creative, and if nobody comes to us, we will look at who has books out from Wisconsin, maybe from Northern Illinois. We'll suggest we'll notice that somebody is appearing in Madison or Chicago and suggest they add us on. So it's work to do it, and you have to do a good job. You still won't get people if you don't follow through and
promote it,
right, and get people there and get some books sold. It's tricky. A lot of people come to us and say, oh, I'm going to say it. So I had a request last week to bring in Trevor Noah. And I was like, ooh, he's $50,000. I don't have that money. So plus he was in Milwaukee not that long ago. But, that's the kind of people don't realize that somebody does have to pay for the travel and things like that, and we wouldn't be able to do it. So we're lucky. We're really at the mercy of publisher. Well, really at the mercy of everyone, but publishers certainly, and the authors themselves, and nonprofits that we work with.
And you have a really nice website, and I imagine that helps.
I hope so. Yeah.
Talk about it for a minute.
We use a wonderful program that the American Booksellers Association, they give you basically the template. And it does some very, you know, considering that we wouldn't be able to afford to do anything if we had to fully cover the cost. I mean, we really are one bookstore in one town.
Yeah.
And so they give us a program where we can sort, you know, for example, people can look up inventory. Like, they can see if we have an actual book or not. It'll say what section it's in. We have people who come in and say, I think you have three of them in the sociology section. I was like, oh, I hope so. I hope they're not on hold. And so we do that. And we also know that most people do look at websites for a couple of things. One of them being, how do I get there? What are their hours?
Yeah.
How do I contact them? And I'm always a little surprised when I look at a website where you don't see that on the first page. But I'm not in the consulting business except on the radio. So I would suggest you do that. But yeah. And then we obviously, because the programming is such an important part of the store, we put a lot of programming right on the front page. And then you can go to another page. We run book clubs. So we have those there. We have staff rec suggestions on the website. It does take a while to program. And I will say that my staff recs are out of date. So now I'm thinking I have to go back and fix that.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, for bookstores to survive, and you know, a lot of them have gone down with online book sales, the kinds of things you do make it worth your while and everybody else's while.
Well, every bookstore has to think, what can I do to get the person to make the choice, being that they can probably get it cheaper and faster elsewhere? Like, how am I going to make that decision to be counterintuitive to my own needs and say I'm going to spend a little extra time to go to the bookstore and support it? And every store, whatever their size is, whatever their program, has to think about that. And, you know, that's by, like, building relationships one by one and doing whatever program you can do, whether it's story times, whether it's having local authors read, which we do a lot of. We are not, you know, we host at least one self-published author a month. We treat them just like everybody else. We don't have local author night and throw them out. We just say, you know, if you make the cut, we're going to promote you the way we do everything and treat them with respect. And but everybody can do that. We work with schools, for example. We do story times in schools bring costumes around. And many stores can do that. So, that's the secret, is that you don't even know half the stuff we're doing. But you really – you do have to have a little hustle nowadays.
I would guess. Well, let's talk about summer reads. What makes a good summer read in your mind?
Well, it came out recently. I do think there is something. While I read some dark and foreboding stories in the summer because I'm a little contrary, I do feel that there is more interest in escapism. I think the publishers do release, are always looking for the romance of summer, the thriller of summer, the fantasy adventure of summer. I do know that there's more interest in, though I did all originals and there are some paperback books, they do almost all their paperback reprinting to arrive. A much higher percentage of paperback reprints arrive April, May, June, and that's and we see it in our sales going up because people are traveling a lot, so they want something a little lighter. I find that they're, like I said, the very serious books, the award winners. It's similar to the movie schedule, except that we have a lot of B-list films. It's not all Disney all the time, 40% of the market. And there's no CGI remakes of any of our books. But there is definitely a little more escapism. And then the serious stuff generally comes out, with exceptions, you know, September, October, November, for award season.
Well, that makes sense as well. Well, let's talk about the 10 books you've chosen.
Okay.
And by the way, well, let me give the number here. If you'd like to join in, maybe a suggestion of a great summer read for you or a question about a book, I hope you'll join us. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, the first on your list is a vintage 1954.
Yes, and I really tried to stick to road. I like concepts, and so I really wanted to do a road trip, and I don't know how you drive to France. But I had to make a couple of exceptions, and this is one. It's a travel book in a couple of ways, in that it is in France, but also it's a time travel book, which are very popular nowadays. This is the story of four people in contemporary Paris who drink a bottle of tainted Beaujolais Nouveau. It's tainted by aliens, but I don't know how that backstory works. And they wind up in 1950s Paris. There is an old the building owner who is from an old and esteemed family that's fallen on hard times. There's a woman who runs a little shop in the building. There's a gentleman who's a bartender at Harry's, which is the American style bar. And then there's a gentleman from Milwaukee. His name is Bob. He works at Harley Davidson. And he has gone there. He's in this building where all the people are in an Airbnb. His wife is very sick, and he has taken some time to recuperate from that. He is a bit of a rube. And unlike the other people, when they go back in time, he doesn't quite understand that he's back in time, especially because they were having old-timey days in Paris. But he's the most charming rube. And I have to say that he is from Milwaukee, and Antoine Lorraine, who wrote the book, did base him a little on his trip to Milwaukee, that he went to the Harley-Davidson Museum, and that's how he sort of got the idea for that. It's very light. It's perfect summer reading. It's very funny, and people like – we always say, like, you put an Eiffel Tower on a book and twice as many people want to read it. And there is that. It's just very French. He has lots of famous people scattered through the store of the through the story: Jean-Luc Godard, Edith Piaf, Divya Banshi, Salvador Dali, and they just make little side appearances. And sometimes he tells you who they are, and sometimes he doesn't. I mean, you gotta run with it, the aliens and stuff. But this is his 7th novel. Six are available in the United States. And I fell in love with him from the first one that came out here, President's Hat. And we just have so many customers that love him. So it's fun.
It sounds like fun. David in Vernon County has something for us. So let's go there. Hi, David.
Well, I'd like to suggest a book that kind of fits with your theme that I suggest to a lot of people if they haven't come across it. Is called The Endurance by Alfred Lansing. And it's about the Shackleton mission to Antarctica. It is probably the most successful failure in exploration ever. And it's just an astounding read. And it takes you to Antarctica in the heat of the summer.
I like that.
Well, first of all, I like that there's a place involved. There's Antarctica. And it is a classic book. I mean, it's been selling for years. But I love the idea of cooling off in summer weather. I thought, why have I not set any of these? There are some great books set in, like, Alaska. And here I am with all these southern tropical climates.
So, Endurance by Alfred Lansing. Thank you, David. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Talking about traveling the countryside without having to travel, just by doing it through your book reading. Daniel Golden from Boswell Book Company of Milwaukee, our guest today. I'm really pleased to have him with us. And I'm pleased to have Nigel O'Shea as our engineer today, and Jill Nadeau as our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking on a summer reading road trip today with Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Questions or suggestions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And talking about failures, you were reminding me in our little break that one of your books is about failure.
Absolutely. It's one of the books of the summer. It's called Furious Hours, Murder, Fraud, and the Last Trial of Harper Lee by Casey Sepp. It's a true crime novel, true crime book. It's true. It's not a novel. But true crime's a very hot genre with all the podcasts and things right now. So there's renewed interest in stories like this. And it's a triptych of true crime, so to speak. The first part is about this reverend in Alabama. It's a very Alabama e-book, which is a little hot for now, but what can I say? Who didn't murder. We don't know. But a bunch of people who were related to him died under mysterious circumstances after he put a whole bunch of insurance on them. The crimes were never solved. Finally, during the funeral of one of those crimes, one of the relatives of the victims shot him dead. He goes to trial. That doesn't get sorted out. So, and in the midst of this, covering the story is Harper Lee of To Kill a Mockingbird. Everybody wonders, what was she doing after To Kill a Mockingbird? We had that book, So Ghosts Said a Watchman, a few years ago, but she wrote that book before To Kill a Mockingbird. We do know that she traveled with Truman Capote. She was assistant for In Cold Blood, and she got the idea that she was going to travel this because it was only about an hour from her house. She spent years working on the book, and you learned so much, but she never wrote the book. So that's a triple failure. You learn so much about all the people who love Harper Lee will love the book, and let me just say that it's the only thing I might have written the three stories concurrently because, oh my gosh, the guy, Reverend Maxwell, the stuff that he does is that, or we think that he did, was just shocking. It's sad. It's very sad. But it happened, and you're reading about it now. So,
and it's the title again is?
It's called Furious Hours. She is going to, we were talking about events. She's actually going to be in Madison and Milwaukee. She's going to be at Room of One's Own on July 31st. And then the next day, during the day, August 1st, she's going to be at Boswell. She's doing a road trip. She's doing a reading road trip. She's driving from Iowa City to Madison to Milwaukee and then down to Illinois.
Oh, wonderful. Well, let's join in. Let's have another listener join in. Jen and Butternut, it's your turn. Hi, Jen.
Hey, good morning, Larry and Daniel. Great show. I have a summer reading suggestion, something that I've read numerous times, and I love it during the summertime. It is by travel writer Bill Bryson. It's called A Walk in the Woods, and it's about his decision to hike the Appalachian Trail. So not exactly a road trip, more of a trail trip, but he's a middle-aged guy, out of shape, who decides to do this, and he decides to take his donor friend along with him, whose idea of trail food is Twinkies and beer. So, you know, it's a great read. It's hilarious. And, of course, you know, it's somewhat suspenseful. And the descriptions of the scenery along the trail are just amazing.
Bill Bryson's a fun writer. I like to read his books.
I'm also a fan. I love that book from when it came out.
Oh, thank you, Jen. A Walk in the Woods, Bill Bryson. Well, what's another one from your summer list here?
Well, I have to say something to Jen a little bit. I just want to make sure that she has, if she's gotten through all the Bill Brysons that she tries, Tony Horwitz. He just passed away at a very young age. It's very sad. But he wrote Confederates in the Attic and a few other travel books that also have a very kind of strong wit about them. Yeah. A few history, like kind of a multi-talented person like Bryson. I thought we'd go with funny because I did think that book was really funny. This is the funniest book I've read in a long time. It's called We're All in This Together by Amy Jones. It is my trip to Ontario, but not Toronto, which gets all the attention, but Thunder Bay, Ontario, which is kind of the most Wisconsin-y, I think, of the Ontario towns. It's a family dysfunction novel. And I will say, when I was coming up with this list, I realized, oh, goodness, there are some themes that pass through these over and over again. There's a lot of books about sisters. The sisters do not like each other.
That's often the case in books.
Well, you know, I guess I was listening to an author named Beatrice Williams talk about her book, Golden Hour, and she said, if they liked each other, where's the book? So I was like, okay, fine. I guess maybe they can get along at the end. And sometimes when they're like 90, they resolve it. So in this case, there's a family, Finn and Nikki, and the other recurring theme is people running away from home. So this is a... like it's a very much like a Wisconsin town, Thunder Bay. It's Finnish. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a little Upper Michigan, too. And Nikki is home with her family and her four children from three men, while Finn has escaped to glamorous Toronto. Only she lives in the suburbs in a really ugly building, and she never goes out and just watches streams Netflix, I guess, all the time. They have a terrible relationship from that. One of Nikki's children is obsessed with sharks, but particularly a shark sighting in Lake Superior. And she is convinced that she is going to find the shark and also find the glamorous TV scientist from Discovery Channel who's chasing after it. But all what brings everybody together is the mother, Kate, who's just going over the falls in a barrel. Nobody quite knows why. We're not talking about Niagara Falls. We're talking about Kakabeka Falls, which is outside Thunder Bay. Every character is dealing with some sort of craziness. And one of my favorite things about the story is it jumps around from person to person. Sometimes those can be hard to follow.
Yeah.
But Amy Jones gives you little road signs so that, for example, when we're talking about Kate, we see a barrel. And when we're talking about London, the young girl chasing the shark, we've got a shark. When we see Finn, she's got an exclamation point because I think she's always yelling at everybody. So it's published by an imprint, a big publisher, but they're a little Canadian imprint. But we have just had so much. People just love the book. It's so silly and funny but still warm. I like my two emotions together. I should like scary because it's thrillery season, but I like funny and sad together.
Yeah. So that makes sense. So we're all in this together.
Right. By Amy Jones. Yeah.
Amy Jones. Well, let's go to Ron in Milwaukee for a call here. Ron, hi.
Good morning.
Morning. What's on your mind?
I'm calling with a suggestion for a summer read, and it is a book titled The Individualist. Came out late last year. It's the autobiography of musician Todd Rundgren. And it is formulated in a way that every page is a chapter. So you can pick it up and read a page at any place in the book and learn interesting things that are far outside of his musical world, related to technologies and video and other things that he pioneered in. Another very, very interesting section is where he took an around-the-world ticket where he only had to continue to fly easterly and went through many countries in the Middle East and such prior to the fall of the Shah. So there's all kinds of very, very interesting things you wouldn't think were about, you know, concerts or albums and such that he may be better known for.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't read it, but I could probably... if you wanted to be in pain, I could sing you some Todd Rundgren songs.
Oh, so The Individualist. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. Well, let's take one more. Sandy in New Berlin, your turn.
Hi, Larry and Daniel. I'm calling about a book called The Beautiful No. It was written by Sherry Salata, and her history is that she was, for at least 10 years, the executive producer on The Oprah Show. So this book tells about her adventures, not so much about the show, but why her job was overwhelming to her and what she did about it and how she lived her life. Well, on the back of the book, I have a copy here, and this pretty much sums it up. It says, in this bracingly honest, tender-hearted, profoundly human book, Sherry Salata peels back the layers of a life that on the surface looks like pure success. You know, where we all feel like, oh, wow, if I had that life, it would be great. Well, that was my addition there. And tells the truth of what it is to struggle, to fear, to grieve, to desire. In other words, to live. The Beautiful No will make you laugh, make you cry. It will make you feel. It will make you want to be Sherry Salata's friend. And Daniel, I did meet her, actually, at Barbara's bookstore in Northern Illinois.
Nice.
Right when the book came out. And she is a big fan of the independent bookstores. So she would... it'd be wonderful if we could get her up here.
Yeah, it's interesting, that title. It so sounds like the Shonda Rhimes' Year of Yes, which was a big hit. I'm sort of like, I wonder what... See, that's the problem. It's only yes or no. But there's probably a good maybe book coming somewhere. But yeah, empowerment, you know, that's what... one thing that's really interesting about what you said is that, you know, these books are all kind of fiction and narrative nonfiction, but really the real growth in the book world now is in... personal growth books like this. They are just doing incredibly well, and publishers have new initiatives to publish more of them. It'd be interesting to see how that goes and how we continue to do with them. We do really well with Brené Brown, for example, who's sort of in that area.
Thank you very much, Sandy, for calling. Appreciate your call. You could join in too at 800-642-1234. You have another book from a Minnesota author, is it?
Oh, yes. Ooh, yeah. J. Ryan Stradel, it's his second book. He actually lives in California now, but his writing heart is definitely in Minnesota. His first book was about kitchens, was called Kitchens of the Great Midwest, and it was sort of a food coming of age of a chef. And Lager Queen of Minnesota is about you're not going to believe it. Two sisters. They don't get along. One of them is a baker. She makes amazing pies. She makes pies for a senior center. And she's named the third best pies of Minnesota. So, you know, to go into senior housing, you have to be a relative. So they start coming up with a scam where they take money to be your cousin so you can have one of her pies. She doesn't really have grand plans in life. She actually trades up to a bakery for like a dollar an hour more. Her sister, however, is a brewmaster, and she does that from a young age, and she sort of will do anything she can to get into the brewery business and to shore up a brewery. So she falls in love with this guy who's parents own a cream soda factory, and she convinces them to start making beer again. But to do that, she has to take away the family inheritance and so the sisters stop talking. Now, the baker sister's granddaughter turns out to be a brewer too, and she has the bug. So we know the brewery bug is genetic, because the Lager Queen of Minnesota has said so. But whereas Helen, the older woman, she's like... that brewery is like Hams or Schmitz or I don't know, you know, or Heilemann maybe if it got real. It was supposed to be very successful, so maybe Heilemann. Her granddaughter, the grandniece, Diana, she's more like one of the, you know, like one of the new craft breweries. Ale Asylum, I think, in Madison, or Mob Craft in Milwaukee, you know. But it's all going to come together, because it's not a tragedy. It's a very funny book. And let me just say, yes, it's set in Minnesota, but it sure feels like Wisconsin. One of my pet peeves is that in the South and in New England and even a bit in the West, we have no problems crossing state lines to celebrate regional writers. But we are so driven by these imaginary lines that is like, oh, Michigan book. Blah. So I'm just saying, Minnesota books. We actually have a Minnesota table right now because we had so many Minnesota books.
The Lager Queen of Minnesota and Stradel, is it?
I think it's J. Ryan Stradel. Yeah, and he's going to be he's actually in Milwaukee and also Oconomowoc. So wrong. He's in Milwaukee at Boswell at the Cafe Hollander across the street on August 14th. And then on the 21st, he's at East Troy, which is a really wonderful bookstore called Inklink. And they do this thing called Read and Feed, where they make a meal around a book. So those sell out all the time. You can find out more on her Facebook page. But Yeah, that's going to be really great.
It seems as though you know many of the other book stores, owners, and so forth.
Oh, yes. Well, there's all kinds of ways to meet them. We have conferences during the year where we have workshops, and I've given a few, but I wouldn't go to them if I was you. And then they'll have like a big convention. They want us to meet authors. We go to dinners where they introduce us to authors. They don't really care how we react to the superstars, but they really need us to break out the unknown authors so that they can become superstars. Yeah. So you kind of try to, and you know, that's good for you too, because you catch them on the way up. But I do trade information with other bookstores. I'm in another organization. We, you know, it's really important to work with people. I learned that lesson from Bud Selig's For the Good of the Game, which was another book on my list.
Yeah, talk about that book.
Yeah. I mean, that was really the lesson that I got out of that book. I mean, it was he's a fascinating guy. You know, he was commissioner of baseball. He went through the steroid years, the aborted season, the fights between small and large market teams, the players union. And some people love what he did. A lot of people love what he did, and some people don't love what he did. And some people, but what I found interesting about it and what I connected from it was this idea of working together with the other teams. Now, of course, they have, they can do things that other people can't because of their special, because Major League Baseball is super special, but we can still share information and help each other out. And I enjoyed that really about the book. And of course, for Wisconsin, he brought Major League Baseball back to Milwaukee. And it's really hard for me to say this, at the age of 38. I was like, oh gosh, what did I do in my life?
He's an amazing guy. He teaches a class on the history of baseball here at the University of Wisconsin.
He is a proud alum of University of Wisconsin-Madison, yeah, that's for sure.
From their Department of History,
yeah.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot. Like I said, does everybody love him? No. Is everyone going to love the book? No. Is everyone happy with everything? No. But it's a fascinating book. I will say, I read some sports books. I'm not a good sports person. I kind of doze off when you get too technical about what plays and stuff like that. But I'm interested in the history, and I'm interested in the business, and I'm interested in the culture. And this has a lot of it. So,
well, what about if you want to make God laugh?
Goodness gracious.
Let's go to South Africa.
Right. Once again, don't advise taking a car. this is an interesting book because her first book, Come If You Don't Know the Words, was a huge success in our store. We had, I think, 6 people read it. That's always really fun when you're like sharing books with other people in the store. It's sort of like practice for sharing them with customers. And people would come back and say how much they loved it. It was set during the Soweto uprising, and it was about a black woman and a young white girl. Mm-hmm. And it was a family drama and caught in the midst of history. This story, if you want to make God laugh, is set a little later during the election of Nelson Mandela. It's about, oh, you're not going to believe it, 2 sisters who don't get along. And they've both been through traumatic incidents in the past. One is a former nun. The other one's been married 4 times. And they get on their doorstep, a young black child. And then they find someone to take care of the child, Zadwa. And Zadwa is secretly the child's mother. So it is set during the rise of AIDS. They know that the little baby, Mandla, has AIDS, but the mother does not. And also it's set in the midst of the election of Mandela. There was an Afrikaner resistance movement going on, and their neighbors are involved and are trying to buy their farm. So let me just say, a little history, a lot of family drama, and very passionate. We really enjoy Bianca Murray's writing, and it, like I said, did I say drama? Can I add a capital D? That's a lot of drama.
Lots of drama.
But that, you know, a lot of people really love that. And I'm just giving a warning. Not everybody does. So.
How about If She Wakes?
Well, this is
That's in Maine.
That is true. And I needed a thriller. Now, I will say, one of the things about these 10 books is I read them all. Mm-hmm. And I is this the thriller of summer? It is for me. So I will say there is a book called The Chain by Adrian McKinty, which is set, I think, in Massachusetts. And that is, I guess, pronounced by the experts to be the thriller of summer. But it just seemed – I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't. It's like you kidnap a child so your child doesn't die. It's like a chain letter of kidnappings. Yeah. So I'm not doing that. But a lot of people are. So If She Wakes is about a young woman who is taking an author around, so I identify with that, in a college town in Maine, and suddenly this car crashes into them. The person she's taking around is dead, and she's in a coma. And but she is sentient. Like, she can actually – so we're getting some things from her perspective, even though she's in a coma. The problem is, if she does wake, somebody's going to kill her because she knows too much. So meanwhile – I love this aspect of it. There's somebody trying to solve the case, but it's not a detective and it's not a police sergeant. It's an insurance investigator. So because she wants to know who's being paid off and what's going on. And she's the only person who would realize that this was not an accident. Why? Because she used to be a race car driver. Okay, you have to suspend some disbelief. But I will say that there are a couple things that are really great about this book. One, there's several bad folks in the book, but one of them is just the worst millennial trope. Like, he's just the stereotype of a millennial. He like doesn't dress the way a killer should dress. He knows all. He out-techs all the other killers, and I just thought he was hilarious. And I also say I passed this book. I did a little test marketing in the family. I passed it to my sister in Arizona, who like she reads a lot of literary stuff. But she like read it in a day. And then she saw my other sister in Washington. She passed it to her, and she read it in a day. And I thought, these are very different sisters. So we've had a few of the folks in town. Our mystery people have read it too. So he's got a movie version coming of one of – like, he's the kind of guy that they buy every book for the movies, but they never make them. But I think this one – there's one that's actually filming now.
It's going to work.
Yeah.
Well, we've got, you know, and we're putting your whole list up on our ideas at WPR.org/Larry. So if you want the whole list, but there's one more. Let's talk one more. Where the Crawdads Sing is of the 10. It's the only one I've read.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I will say, so I was thinking about what was selling the best and what people are reading. Now, our best-selling, the first, like, this is almost the beginning of fall. Our first book that sold a ton of copies out of the gate was The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead. That's a dark, it's a fall book. It's serious. It was breathtaking, but it felt folly. But Where the Crawdads Sing, which came out last August, it's crazy, is still selling a year later. In fact, it's selling better because it's the ultimate example of a word-of-mouth book. Those are the books that sell really well at Christmas and sell even better in January. And, you know, Gentlemen in Moscow would be one, Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste Ng, and this is the latest, Delia Owens. She was a Reese Witherspoon book club selection. She is the new Oprah for book club. They're lighter. They're more old, like old style Oprah, as opposed to, I think, the new Oprahs are definitely weightier. She has a mix of kind of stories, but that is a nice jumping off point. It's very North Carolina-y, as you would attest to. Yes. I mean, the Marsh stuff is amazing. It's a mystery. It's a romance. love triangle. It's a Southern coming-of-age story. And it's also a nature narrative. And I think, to me, having read a lot of those other things, it was the nature thing that set it apart, because I was like reading the book thinking, I read it late. I wanted to know what's going on. Why does everybody love this book? And I did feel like it was the really beautiful nature writing, The Marsh, that really set it apart. Because otherwise, the publishers are going, I know what we can do. We're going to take a mystery and wrap it in a romance. That'll do it. That'll do it. So everybody wants to know. It's a lovely story. except for the gruesome parts. And but it's like, it's really got everything. There's a trial. Like, she has a very long trial, and I'm not used to those. You don't see those, like, nowadays, except if you're reading, like, maybe Grisham or, like, the lawyer books, you know. But I was surprised by how long the trial was. But it was, it, you know, everybody's read it, and I jumped on the bus.
Well, you jumped on the bus and traveled to you didn't jump on the bus to travel to Wisconsin. You or to Madison. You drove from Milwaukee to Madison, I'm guessing.
I have taken the bus here, but I did drive this time.
Well, I hope you'll drive back again and be with us again, Daniel.
Oh, thank
you. This has just been very fun.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And we didn't get to all of his books, the 10. But go to our website, WPR.org/Larry, and you're going to find the whole list. And it is a wonderful list of books. And when you're in Milwaukee, a great place to stop is Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. Go online to their you can go online to their website and find out about all of the authors that Daniel has coming and all the other events. So it's great. Daniel, again, come back and be with us again.
It would be a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Daniel Golden owns Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. And that was a lot of fun. We'll talk with him some more about books. We are going to turn our attention to the Mississippi River next. It's been a little bit too big for its banks here recently. And Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine, joins us next. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network.